Hello and welcome to this edition of Wallingford and District Talking newspaper. Articles have been taken from the Wallingford Herald for the 17th of June 2026. Your readers today are Liz, Jane and Sophie. I'm Martin, your producer, and Roger will be copying.
This article is headed Thames Path Anniversary Relay Walk. The Thames Path National Trail is marking its 30th anniversary with a 24-day relay along its full length. The 185.2-mile relay began on Friday last week at the River's Source in Shrewsbury Mead, Gloucestershire, and will conclude in Woolwich, London. Dame Fiona Reynolds, High Sheriff of Gloucestershire, officially launched the event by handing a handmade baton featuring the National Trail icon of an acorn to Paul Flynn of Blue Human Project. Paul Flynn began the first leg of the relay to Ashton Keys. The event is being coordinated by Hannah Gutteridge, manager of the Thames Path National Trail, and her team as part of the National Trail's 30th anniversary celebrations. Ms. Gutteridge said the Thames Path is an important local walking route beside the River Thames for thousands of people who live in the towns, villages and cities between the Source and London. We are delighted that local community groups are leading several sections, starting with Paul Flynn, who is an ambassador for the mental health benefits of blue spaces, especially riverside walks. Community involvement is central to the relay, with groups such as the Windsor River Watch and Waterway Pickers Staines leading the Eton to Staines leg and the relay on June the 22nd. The Thames Path National Trail was officially opened in 1996. It remains the only national trail to follow a river from source to sea. The relay is detailed on the Thames Path National Trail website.
Hello, I'm Jane. The next article is Police Vehicle Helps Seize Cloned Plate Car. A newly deployed police vehicle has already helped officers seize a car bearing cloned license plates. Officers in Wantage and Grove spotted the suspicious vehicle just 2 days after starting use of their latest addition to the force, affectionately nicknamed Beaver. Checks revealed it was displaying cloned plates, which are often used to facilitate other criminal activity. In a Facebook post, TVP South Oxfordshire and Vale of Whitehall said, "Well, damn. Beaver got her first victim within 2 days of service. Our newest police vehicle has already proven she's not here to mess around. The vehicle was seized, the clone plates exposed, and Beaver proudly chalked up her first win on the board. Cloned vehicles are commonly used by offenders to avoid detection."
Hello, this is Sophie, and our next headline is Play Space Questions. A new sensory play area could soon be built in Berinsfield. South Oxfordshire District Council is seeking public feedback on two possible locations for the project, Green Furlong or Fane Drive, and the types of sensory equipment that would best support children with special educational needs or disabilities, SEND. The play area is being developed in response to parents' concerns that existing playgrounds in the area are often too busy and noisy. A survey is open until June the 22nd and can be accessed on the Council's website. Once the survey closes, all feedback will be reviewed and summarised in a report to finalise the play area.
Developer looks to get on with surgery. A newly appointed developer for a long-awaited GP surgery in Didcot said staff are raring to go to provide the new service for residents. Great Western Park, a 3,300 home estate, is due to be finished this year and was initially granted planning permission in 2008 with a new GP surgery included. The planning permission for the new surgery dates back about 10 years, but there have been repeated delays. In April, Woodlands Medical Centre appointed London-based Apsley Henley Med Limited as the new developer for the long-awaited project. The AHML team has for over 30 years delivered GP surgeries around the UK from Kent to Scotland. The appointment follows action taken by the former NHS Buckinghamshire, Oxfordshire and Berkshire West Integrated Care Board, abbreviated to BOB ICB, to identify an alternative developer. This comes after Assura's proposal for the new surgery building was deemed unaffordable. Nick Bastian, director at Apsley Henley Med Limited, said, "We are looking forward to working with the GP practice, Thames Valley ICB and Vale of Whitehorse District Council on this exciting scheme. Our team is ready and fired up to get started." Partners at the Woodland Medical Centre are hopeful the project can now move forward while recognising that several legal hurdles remain before construction can begin. It added that vital steps include progressing the required legal agreements between all parties and completing the land transfer to Vale of Whitehorse District Council. Apsley Henley Med Limited also pledged to continue engagement with Woodlands Medical Centre to keep the project moving and ensure compliance with all regulatory requirements. Ollie Glover, MP for Didcot and Wantage, has repeatedly pressed for updates on the delayed scheme. In October, he raised the issues in the House of Commons with former Health Secretary Wes Streeting, urging action to help unblock plans. Following this exchange, Mr. Streeting promised to find out what's gone wrong. Mr. Glover explained at the time that Great Western Park has added more than 3,000 homes to Didcot, with Valley Park under construction adding over 4,000 more. Yet the GP surgery promised in 2008 remains an empty patch of land. Despite the council having granted planning permission, Woodland Surgery being prepared to run the new facility and the Integrated Care Board supporting the case for one, progress was stalled with NHS England, leaving local primary care services struggling to cope with increasing demand for appointments. Mr. Glover said earlier, "Residents in Great Western Park have waited far too long for the GP surgery that was promised years ago. With a new developer now appointed, this should provide the momentum that is needed to get this project up and running."
Body found in car park at Riverside was a carpenter. A carpenter whose body was found near a lock on the River Thames died from the use of drugs and alcohol. Alexander Collins, a 57-year-old who lived in Didcot, was found dead in Cullum Lock car park in Abingdon on Easter Monday, April the 6th. There was a police presence for much of the day with a cordon blocking entry to the car park on the River Thames and a blue tent erected. Police confirmed the man was found in a vehicle, not in the water, and a black 4x4 vehicle was later recovered from the screen. They had been called at 4:35 a.m. and at just past 5 a.m, Madeline Andrew, a paramedic with South Central Ambulance Service, confirmed the death. At one time, one woman who lives in Cullum but did not want to be named said it was frightening to see such a large police incident in what is usually a quiet village. She said there were a lot of local people standing around staring and the lock keeper was there with his hands on his head. She added, "It's such a beautiful public area we use and walk around every day, and now it's making us not want to go down there out of fear of what might occur. It has been extremely distressing to my younger sister who couldn't sleep last night due to be worried and having full sight of what happened. When I was walking down there was full visibility of the scene and police stood around. While I understand it's another day on the job for them, it was very distressing to locals who, of course, rarely, if ever, experience something like this somewhere like Cullum. The body found in the car park was identified on the same day by Helen Backhouse, a police officer. An inquest was opened at Oxfordshire Coroner's Court on June the 10th, with proceedings scheduled to resume on September the 21st. Mr. Collins was born on February the 23rd, 1969, in Eccles, Greater Manchester, but lived in Didcot and worked as a carpenter. A post-mortem examination gave two causes of death. The first was toxicity from antidepressant mirtazepam and prescription opioid pain relief medication, codeine and alcohol toxicity. The second was a heart disease, which was narrow arteries restricting blood flow to the heart, and the article was accompanied by what is a lovely picture of Cullum Lock.
Family Fun Day at Pub Skittles event. A family fun day centred around the traditional game of pub skittles took place in Wallingford over the weekend. Organised by Wallingford's ABM Skittles Club, the event forms part of the Hildreds Festival of Skittles and was held at the Sports Park on Sunday. The club, the only Skittles club in Oxfordshire, was established in 1964 and used the event to raise funds for the Wallingford Accessible Boat Club. The club is a volunteer-run charity offering free boat trips on the River Thames for disabled and elderly people. People also took part in a pay what you like and had a go at six indoor and outdoor pub games. Bar Skittles, Aunt Sally, Vintage Bar Bagatelle, Quoits, Toad in the Hole and Batten Trap were among the games on offer. Saturday was dedicated as a formal tournament, the Hildreds GB Team Invitation Championship, with Skittles teams travelling from all over the UK to take on the best of the ABM. A spokesman said, "The GB Open, where eight teams visited from England and Wales and eight home teams competed, with the Wanderers of the Royal Forest of Dean champions for 2026. And accompanying this is a picture of 16 jolly men who took a break from playing Skittles for the photo.
Quiet Lane plan could save £1 million. Plans for a new traffic-free quiet lane could save £1 million in costs for a much-needed pavement. Cat Lane and Firebrass Hill in Ewelm, near Wallingford, is one of 10 sites for proposed quiet lanes. Oxfordshire County Council would close the road to traffic using gates or bollards, creating routes for cyclists, pedestrians and horse riders. Councillor Gavin McLaughlin, the County Councillor for Benson and Cromarsh, suggested a quiet lane for Cat Lane and Firebrass Hill. He described the stretch of road as occasionally busy with no footpath down the side, which is a problem for families who live there who have to get their children to primary school. For ages, they've been trying to get pavements put down the side of the road, Mr. McLaughlin said. And pavements on a quiet country lane probably cost £1 million plus, which is always going to be difficult to argue when you look for ever-decreasing funds that local councils have. I showed the chief executive and a few other people around Cat Lane last summer. They are still trying to get the pavements down the side so that there's safe travel. But when the quiet lanes idea came up, I spoke to one of my Green Party colleagues and said, I don't know whether it would be suitable or not, but shall we have a look at Cat Lane at some point and see if it's suitable even for a quiet lane? Now, so far, that's the only conversation I've had. Mr. McLaughlin stressed no decision has been made and that there will be a consultation with residents and the parish council. He believes uproar from some people regarding quiet lanes is because some don't like surprises, but prefer to be talked to understand the issues and then act. On the benefits, he said that Cat Lane would be safer for cyclists and pedestrians if traffic would be limited. The road is mainly used by people to get from the Watlington Road, the B4009, into the top of Ewelme. Gareth Epps, Oxfordshire County Council Cabinet Member for Transport, said, "Quiet lanes form part of the County Council's commitment to making roads safer and encouraging sustainable travel. By removing through traffic, quiet lanes can reduce vehicle numbers and speeds, lower the risks and severity of collisions, and make minor roads feel calmer and safer. New quiet lanes will only be taken forward where there is an explicit request and demonstrated support from the parish or town council and county council elected member. If a site is not supported and does not meet the criteria published in the guidance, it will not go ahead. Before any sites are trialled, we will expect to see dialogue with local residents and other stakeholders, including businesses such as farms, to understand potential impacts and help to decide whether to continue developing an individual quiet lane. If a quiet lane does go ahead as a trial, changes can be made and there will be a public consultation to gather feedback."
Bakery gets planning permission. Plans for a new bakery in Wallingford have been given the go-ahead by town hall officials. Blueberry Bread Co. already sells its loaves from the bread shed at Savage's Garden Centre in Blueberry and Route 1 Garden Centre in Britwellcombe, Sotwell. Having first opened in May 2020, the artisan bakery has risen to immediate success and is already popular with bread and pastry lovers. Run by baker Jack O'Nolan, the new shop in St Peter's Place, Wallingford, had submitted a planning application to South Oxfordshire District Council. Planning officer Will Darrison has given it his approval, which included the refurbishment and refit of the empty space, new signage, a side extract grill and air conditioning units. He said in his report, "Planning permission is granted because the proposed development would retain the site for employment, have an acceptable impact on the appearance of the building, and would not be harmful to the character and appearance of the conservation area. It would not harm the setting of nearby listed buildings, and it wouldn't result in material harm to any neighbouring properties. The vacant shop is to be redecorated on the outside with vinyl signage on the west brick wall and the front elevation of the company's logo." The planning application said the changes would create a traditional bakery and bread shop, but with a contemporary twist to place the shop in 2026. And since they wrote this article, the shop is now actually open.
District is top in England for data centre planning. South Oxfordshire has become a hub for new data centre developments. The district recorded the highest number of planning applications for data centres in England between 2021 and 2026, according to data collected through Freedom of Information requests by 2580 Group. South Oxfordshire District Council received 7 applications during this period, approving 6 of them. Sheffield City Council and Buckinghamshire Council each received 6 applications, the next highest figures among responding councils. Michael Scott, director at 2580 Group, said, "Data centres are a critical part of our national infrastructure. These sites provide the power and capacity needed to run the digital tools that businesses and consumers now rely on every day, from the internet and apps like Instagram and Facebook, to CRMs and large language models like ChatGPT and Claude. As demand grows, developers, investors, and councils will need to think carefully about where new data centres are built and how they are delivered. Of the 50 councils that provided data, a total of 84 data centre planning applications were recorded, with 54 approvals. Applications have risen sharply in recent years, doubling from 13 in 2024 to 26 in 2025. Mr. Scott said the trend was likely to continue and highlighted the importance of meeting industry standards.
Princess Di's Jaguar sells for £66,000. A car that featured in one of the People's Princess's most iconic moments has been sold for £66,000. The car that Princess Diana stepped out of while wearing her iconic revenge dress went up for sale this month without a guide price. The late royal emerged from the Jaguar XJ40 wearing a black off-the-shoulder Christina Stambolian gown in 1994, days after then Prince Charles admitted he had been unfaithful. The dress made headlines around the world, with many interpreting that it was worn in revenge for Charles's affair. The car is said to be in good condition, with 45,000 miles on the clock, minor scuffs on the wheel, and a number of small, shallow dinks. And there's a picture of the Jaguar XJ40 looking lovely in the sunshine on a lawn.
Sewing project, men's clothes and cuts carbon. A grassroots sewing project is helping people gain practical skills while cutting carbon emissions. The scheme run by One Planet Abingdon has supported participants to repair and make clothes, boosting confidence and building community connections, environmental progress and personal well-being. Jane Gallagher from Community First Oxfordshire said, "The sewing project is the most wonderful, welcoming and friendly space where people from all walks of life come together to share sewing skills, to connect, to learn new skills and take those skills back home with them." Following the presentation of their own sewing machines, the women now have a way to make and mend their own clothes and clothes for their children, family and friends, which is great for them and great for the environment, rather than today's fast fashion. The project is funded by the NHS Integrated Care Board's World Together programme and is delivered in partnership with Oxfordshire Community Voluntary Action, Oxfordshire CAF and Community First Oxfordshire. Workshops use donated materials and teach essential sewing machine skills in small groups. All the participants said they will now mend their own clothes as a direct result of the workshops, with 80% also reporting significant improvements to their physical or mental health.
Husband with dementia killed wife before suicide. A husband killed his wife before committing suicide at their village home after being diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, an inquest has heard. Zena Patricia Hoskins, 77, and David Michael Hoskins, 80, were found at their home at Serendipity in Old Moor, Milton, near Didcot, on September 15th last year. He was a retired engineer, and she had twice been chair of the parish council and only recently stepped down to look after her husband. An inquest at Oxfordshire Coroner's Court ruled Mrs. Hoskins died from unlawful killing, while Mr. Hoskins died from suicide. It was noted that there was no prior history of domestic abuse or violence, nor signs of any struggle or forced entry to the house. The toxicology reports were not deemed relevant, but Mr. Hoskins had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease and dementia in 2024, and it was said this was likely to have played a part in the tragedy. Their family said that, in the months prior to his death, there had been a deterioration in Mr. Hoskins' mental state, and his related memory loss and confusion had caused stress in the pair's relationship, including arguments over food. They were last seen by their three grandsons, who went around for dinner in the late afternoon of September the 12th. Several days passed in which there was no answer at the door when a delivery person called, and Mrs. Hoskins did not respond to messages and calls from her daughter, Alison Wood. Ms. Wood went to Serendipity in the late afternoon of September the 15th, and discovered her father in the garage. Police were called and they found her mother in bed with multiple wounds to her head. A note in the kitchen, signed by D, asked for Min, their cat, to be given a good home. In his conclusion, Coroner Darren Salter confirmed it was likely Mrs. Hoskins was asleep when the blows were struck. He said, "There were multiple blows, at least four with two hammers, it seems. She was likely to have been knocked unconscious and would not have known what was happening." Mr. Salter added that it was probable she was killed on September the 12th, considering she was in bed in her night clothes and had not taken her morning medication. On Mr. Hoskins, the coroner concluded it was suicide by hanging and that it was likely to have occurred late on September 12th or early on September 13th. Forensic pathologist Dr. Brett Lockyer noted there was a partial sharp force injury to his body that was probably self-inflicted. It was noted by Detective Inspector Alice Broad of Thames Valley Police's Major Crime Unit that if Mr. Hoskins had survived, he would almost certainly have faced a murder charge. However, she added that he would have likely called for diminished responsibility given his dementia. And accompanying this article is a photograph of three police officers at the scene in Milton in September 2025.
Royal family pays respects to Lady Pamela at village funeral. Mourners, including members of the royal family, were among the people paying their respects to Lady Pamela Hicks at her funeral on Saturday. The service for the 97-year-old took place at St Bartholomew's Church in Brightwell Baldwin, between Wallingford and Watlington. Lady Pamela died at her home in the village, where she had lived for many years with her late husband, interior designer David Hicks. Among the mourners were Lady Helen Taylor, daughter of Prince Edward, and Penelope Knatchbull, Countess of Mountbatten of Burma. There was no sign of King Charles or Queen Camilla, though as the funeral came on the same day as Trooping the Colour, the King's official London birthday parade. Nevertheless, mourners paid their respects outside the church as the coffin was carried inside, before following the procession for the service. The small parish church is close to the Grove, the family house that became Lady Pamela's long-term base in Oxfordshire. According to the published order, the funeral was arranged in line with Lady Pamela's wishes, with rousing hymns but no formal sermon or eulogy during the service. Lady Pamela was the first cousin of the late Prince Philip and a great-great-granddaughter of Queen Victoria. She was also a bridesmaid at the 1947 wedding of the then Princess Elizabeth and Lieutenant Philip Mountbatten. She later served as a lady-in-waiting to Queen Elizabeth II and accompanied the then princess on her 1952 tour of Kenya. This was when news came through of King George VI's death and Elizabeth's accession to the throne. Following her death on June 5th, King Charles paid a warm tribute, saying he was greatly saddened to learn of the death of Lady Pamela Hicks, a sorrow tempered by the fondest memories and deepest gratitude for her long life and loyal service to Queen Elizabeth. In the statement released by Buckingham Palace, he added that her warmth, wit, and perspicacity always made such an impression, and that she would be so dearly missed by all those she knew and loved her. Lady Pamela is survived by her three children, Edwina, Ashley, and India, and several grandchildren, many of whom were at the village service. Brightwell Baldwin is a small rural parish in South Oxfordshire, about 4 miles northeast of Wallingford and close to the foot of the Chiltern Hills. The village, whose name comes from the Old English for bright spring, had a population of just over 200 at the latest census and is centred around a handful of stone cottages, farm buildings and the church. The church itself dates back to the 13th and 14th centuries, with later medieval additions, and is regarded as one of South Oxfordshire's most interesting historic churches. And there's several pictures of the mourners all dressed in black outside the church, waiting for the hearse to be taken in, the coffin.
Students create fans in STEM challenge. Students put their engineering skills to the test by building motorised fans out of Lego. The Year 8 pupils from Aurea School in Didcot took part in a STEM workshop led by House of Fun, which challenged them to create working models using Lego and motorised parts. The fan building activity proved timely during the warm weather. Nicola Poulton, science technician and teaching assistant at Aurea, said, "Jake from House of Fun came along to deliver a brick session to the students, and they were able to build, create and explore a variety of engineering concepts using Lego bricks. They were building motorised fans, which were very much appreciated in a warm room. The students were able to use their knowledge of the cogs and gears in order to help make the fans turn faster. The workshop introduced pupils to concepts such as centrifugal force, gear ratios and transmissions. It also encouraged them to invent their own designs and experiment." Miss Poulton said, "We have been hosting this event for a few years, and it is a great experience for the students to explore some different scientific concepts in a fun learning environment. It is a great way to encourage students in both scientific and creative learning. Aurea School is part of the GLF Schools Multi-Academy Trust."
Supercar Drive Experience is launched. A new supercar driving experience has been launched at three Oxfordshire airfield sites. Track Days is promising the biggest and best ever experience at Abingdon Airfield, Bicester Heritage and Shennington Airfield near Banbury. The Anytime 27-mile triple supercar driving experience offers 9 miles each in three different cars. To celebrate its arrival, the price has been reduced by 67% compared to what it would normally be, and is available for a limited time special offer of £499. The cars available to enjoy include the Lamborghini Gallardo, Ferrari California, McLaren 720s, Aston Martin DB11 and Porsche 911. Imran Malik, Corporate Sales Manager at trackdays.co.uk, said, "We are delighted thrill seekers now have the chance to drive an incredible array of supercars for a longer amount of time. This extra time behind the wheel, alongside an expert driving instructor, will allow them to get a full appreciation of the breathtaking performance that these incredible feats of automotive engineering are capable of." The experience, available on a weekday or weekend at no extra cost, starts with a welcome and sign-on, followed by a driver's safety briefing. In addition, participants can also have a high-speed passenger ride in a hot hatchback. Mr. Malik added, "This experience offers 27 miles of pure supercar driving pleasure, showcasing the most exotic marks in our fleet."
Changing rooms get transformation. A leisure centre's changing rooms have been given a modern makeover as part of a £250,000 upgrade. Didcot Wave's leisure centre's dry side changing facilities have been refurbished using funds from developer contributions. Improvements include a new monochrome colour scheme and enhanced accessibility. Peter Paul Barker, Cabinet Member for Finance and Property Assets at South Oxfordshire District Council, said, "These new changing rooms are eye-catching and give the site a real freshen up. The upgrade has also given more space, which immediately improves the experience for visitors. The refurbishment involved removing two dividing walls to create a more spacious and open environment. Energy-efficient LED lighting has been installed throughout the area, along with new circulation systems that regulates temperature and humidity while saving energy. The modern look is completed by a black and white colour scheme. Upgraded accessible facilities ensure the centre is more user-friendly for people of all abilities. The improvements follow the introduction of two new studios last November, one multi-use and one for spin classes, in space formerly used by a cafe and a kitchen. With the changing room upgrades now complete, attention is turning to further improvements at Didcot Wave. Early stage plans are underway for a new teaching pool alongside a major decarbonisation project. The centre will replace end-of-life gas boilers with solar panels, air source heat pumps and improved insulation. These measures are expected to reduce running costs and cut carbon emissions. Councillor Barker said, following the addition of the new studios last year and the upgrade of the changing areas, we are working on plans around the pool facilities and the decarbonisation scheme. Didcot Wave is getting ready to support residents to stay fit and healthy for decades to come.
Tractor Enthusiasts Enjoy Festival. Over 1,000 exhibits went on display at a steam show. Lovers of vintage vehicles flocked to the Stoke Row Steam Rally near Wallingford. Steam engines, vintage cars and motorbikes all featured, drawing families and enthusiasts to the countryside event in South Oxfordshire. There was also a craft tent, live music, Isadora the Dragon entertained children, and a historic steam-powered merry-go-round gave rides accompanied by songs from Oliver and from My Fair Lady. Paul Cottrell, 59, said, "I bought the Celtrac 1940-41 in Lambourne, the one the scrap man didn't get. I replaced all the bits that were missing." The article's accompanied by a picture of two people riding a small steam tractor around the festival.
Veteran conservationist in water bike river test. A 90-year-old explorer is taking on a marathon quest to raise funds for rainforest research. Robin Hanbury-Tennyson is riding a water bike 104 miles down the River Thames from Oxford to Teddington Lock, Richmond, to raise £150,000 for the Thousand Year Trust. The trust, led by his son Merlin, plans to use the funds to help build Europe's first temperate rainforest research station on Bodmin Moor. Mr. Hanbury-Tennyson begins the challenge at Magdalen Bridge, Oxford, on Friday, June 19th, aiming to complete the equivalent of a marathon each day over 4 days, finishing at Teddington Lock on Monday, June the 22nd, International Rainforest Day. The journey marks another adventure for the celebrated conservationist, despite his age. Mr. Hanbury-Tennyson said, "At 90, you work with what you've got, and you keep going." He has spent decades exploring and protecting rainforests across the globe, but says the UK's own rainforest is almost forgotten. Mr. Hanbury-Tennyson said, "I've spent a lifetime exploring the world's great rainforests. What many people don't realise is that one of the most remarkable was right here on our own doorstep, and it's almost gone. I've seen what we've lost. I've reached an age where I feel, rather urgently, that if I'm going to do something about it, I'd better get on with it." Britain's temperate rainforest, once stretching along the Atlantic coast, is now reduced to fragmented and degraded patches. The Thousand Year Trust operates a 250-acre restoration site near Bodmin Moor, home to an ancient oak woodland more than 3,600 years old. The proposed research station, designed by architects Unknown Works, will include laboratory facilities, a community hub, and a living roof. It will accommodate up to 12 researchers and support long-term ecological study. Merlin Hambry Tennyson, founder and managing director of the Thousand Year Trust, said, "My father spent his life fighting for the natural world. To see him take on something like this at 90, for a cause we are now building together, is extraordinary. This research station will give Britain's temperate rainforest the scientific home it has never had. We are asking people to help us make it a reality." Mr. Hambry Tennyson will be supported by his son and Conservation Director Harrison Carter in an escort boat. And accompanying this article is a photograph of Robin Hambry Tennyson sitting in a chair. And accompanying this article is a photograph of Robin Hambry Tennyson sitting in a chair next to what looks like a pond with his water bike on the water.
Curious facts with Jennifer Welsh. Fun little figures. Staffordshire figures first appeared in the Staffordshire potteries during the mid-18th century. Unlike the expensive refined porcelain of Chelsea or Derby, these wares were produced by a collection of smaller factories. Their work captured the spirit of common people adorning mantelpieces of the middle and working classes. Early examples were charming folk-like figures, simple, largely uncoloured, and made from salt-glazed stoneware. By the 19th century, potters transitioned to higher quality lead-glazed earthenware. Figures became vibrantly coloured, often featuring a striking cobalt blue and complex bocage, a backdrop of trees and plants. Staffordshire figures reflect a diverse range of personalities, traditionally serving as a mirror for popular culture and world events. Royalty, like Victoria and Albert, were favourites, alongside military heroes like Nelson and Wellington. Inspiration was also drawn from literary and folklore figures, as well as sports stars and personalities. It is, however, the animals that remain the most popular subjects, with the wonderful Staffordshire Spaniel standing out as the most iconic. As the 19th century progressed, potters moved towards the mass market. This led to flatbacks. Primarily modelled on the front, these were cheaper and easier to produce. And there is a picture of said flatbacks of a pair of spaniels.
Landmark Oxfordshire estate hits market at £26.5 million. An historic riverside manor house estate used as a spiritual retreat and featured on ITV's Endeavour has been put on the market for sale at £26.5 million. The Newnham estate at Newnham Courtney is one of the country's most distinctive and historically significant country estates. It has now been listed on the open market with bidwells at a guide price of £26.5 million. It was begun in 1756 for Simon Harcourt, 1st Earl Harcourt, on land his family had acquired in the early 18th century, replacing an earlier house and the original village, which were cleared away to make room for the new estate. Architect Stiff Ledbetter designed the main house, while interiors were developed with input from James Albion Stewart. The surrounding landscape was later reshaped by Lancelot Capability Brown, who created sweeping parkland walks and planted screening between the house and the river. The estate remained in the Harcourt family's house for generations and became known for its pleasure grounds and horticultural experiments. Successive owners then adapted both the building and gardens in line with changing fashions. During the Second World War, the property was requisitioned by the RAF for photographic reconnaissance work. The Harcourts then sold the wider Newnham estate to the University of Oxford in the post-war period. In more recent decades, Newnham House has been used as a hall of residence, a conference centre, and underlies to the Brahma Kumaris World Spiritual University as the Global Retreat Centre. Whilst its historic house and gardens have been recognised with Grade 2 listing. According to IMDb, it served as the key filming location for the Lewis episode titled Old Unhappy, Far Off Things. In the story, the estate serves as the fictional Lady Matilda's College, which is preparing for a reunion of its first female-only graduating class. The exact same mansion was used as a filming location for the prequel series Endeavour in the episode Arcadia, where it stood as its commune. Extending to 1,054 acres, 426 hectares, and positioned just 5 miles from central Oxford, the estate represents a rare generational opportunity for private buyers, institutions and long-term investors, according to Bidwells. The estate includes 810 acres of arable land, 176 acres of pasture, parkland and woodland, a portfolio of 27 residential properties, a 10-unit holiday let business, and a range of commercial premises, workshops and agricultural buildings. The freehold of Newnham House and its associated buildings sits within 40 acres of parkland, is held on a long-term FRI lease. In addition to its existing income streams, which currently generate approximately £400,000 per annum, the estate holds significant underlying mineral reserves. The article is accompanied by a picture of Sean Evans in Endeavour, and also a rather lovely picture, aerial picture of the estate.
Time for On This Day Now. And in 1579, Sir Francis Drake anchored the Golden Hind just north of what would one day be San Francisco Bay, naming the area New Albion. And on this day last year, Olympic gold medalist Catherine Granger and former Cabinet Secretary Simon Case had been given peerages, Downing Street announced. Celebrating their birthdays today are film director Ken Loach, who turns 90, singer Barry Manilow is 83, Ken Livingstone, ex-London mayor, is 81, the actor Greg Kinnear is 63, former athlete Diane Modal turns 60 today, and the actor Jason Patrick is 60. And on this day in history, in 1703, the founder of Methodism, John Wesley, was born, the 15th of 19 children of a clergyman. And in 1823, Charles Mackintosh patented the waterproof cloth he was to use to make raincoats. In 1885, the dismantled Statue of Liberty arrived in New York Harbour from France. And on this day in 1944, Iceland became a republic. June the 17th is now Icelandic National Day. In 1970, Edwin Land patented his Polaroid camera. And on this day in 1972, five burglars were caught in the Watergate office complex in Washington, election headquarters of the Democratic Party, sparking a major political scandal. And finally, on this day in 1991, in South Africa, the repeal of the Population Registration Act of 1950 officially ended apartheid.
That concludes today's edition. We hope you enjoyed listening, and until next time, it's goodbye from us all. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Goodbye.